From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So get the Disney image of Alice in Wonderland out of your head completely if you're going to fully appreciate the next hour of radio theater. Think about the first time you read the story. Sure, Lewis Carroll wrote it for a charming little girl, but remember how creepy it all seemed? The playwright Matthew Ivan Bennett says most of us remember the tale through what he calls the fumes of menace. He figures it's because it works on a subconscious level. Somehow, deep in our mind, the nonsense of this language and these characters makes us darken the colors of this wonderland. So Bennett decided to capitalize on these shadows when he reworked Alice's story for the radio. He pushes it from bad dream to nightmare. Today, Plan B Theater Company presents Bennett's take on Lewis Carroll's story, and you'll hear it when we get back from the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today we continue our Halloween tradition with another piece of radio theater. This is our fifth and final collaboration with the Plan B Theater Company. We're broadcasting live from the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in Salt Lake City. And now, Radio Hour Alice.
Close your eyes. Let your eyelids plummet. Look into the black. Relax your shoulders, your face. Breathe. Unlatch the door of your subconscious and see yourself right now sitting on the bank of a lazy river stained with sunset. Hot August breath blows on the red-flecked water. A wounded-looking finch flaps overhead. A brown bed of clover surrounds you, and you're beginning to get very tired, having nothing to do. Very tired. Once or twice, you peep into the book your sister is reading, but it has no pictures or conversations in it, and...
What is the use of a book?
You think.
Without pictures or conversations.
So you consider braiding your long blonde hair. When presently, a white rabbit with what looks like bleeding eyes runs close by you.
Blast it! Blast it! I shall be late!
Nothing so remarkable in that, you think, although you wonder that the rabbit carried a short black whip and a pocket watch. He clutched the whip with one paw and flipped open the watch with the other as he strode along, his pus-filled eyes popping. You think...
I have never seen a rabbit with a whip or a pocket watch before.
Burning with curiosity, you run across the field after it, just in time to see it pop down a large rabbit hole under the hedge. And down you go in pursuit, going straight on through a tunnel for some way, and then... You tumble suddenly down a very deep well. You try to see the bottom, but it's too dark to see anything. You look at the sides of the well as they blur by, noticing that they're filled with cupboards, bookshelves, maps, and pictures. You lunge for one of the shelves, but you're only able to grab a glass jar. You open it...
Perhaps there's a parachute inside.
Unfortunately, it's full of wet spider eggs. Down, down, down you fall. The sides of the well now bare earth, riddled with snake holes. A million reptoid eyes follow you. Down, down, down.
I wish Dinah were down here with me. There aren't any mice in the air, but she might catch a bat. But do cats eat bats, I wonder?
The deeper you fall, the sleepier you become.
Do cats eat bats? Do bats eat cats? Now, Dinah, tell me the truth. Did you ever eat a bat? Oh!
Down you come, a heap of sticks and dead leaves breaking your fall. You jump to your feet, brush off the white sundress you're wearing, look up, and before you is a long, dank, cold dirt passage. The white rabbit's still in sight, hurrying down it.
Mr. Rabbit!
You run after the rabbit, leaving the leaf pile behind.
Oh, my fur! How late it's getting!
You run. The rabbit hops around a corner, you follow it, and it disappears. All you see is a long, low stone hall, lit up by a row of silver, snake-shaped lamps hanging from the roof. Your breath condensates in the air. No rabbit. You see several doors, but no rabbit. You try all of the doors. Every one of them is locked. You wonder,
how am I ever to get out again?
When you bump into a three-legged table of solid glass, nothing on it but a tiny golden key, the end of it shaped like a skull. You pass around the hall again. A low, tattered curtain catches your eye. Behind it is a little wooden door 15 inches high. Etched into it is the picture of a hanged man with a mob all around him, laughing. Bravely, you try the little key in the lock, and to your great delight, it fits. You open the door to find a passage no larger than a rat hole. You kneel down, and at the end of the passage, you see beds of bright orange flowers and cool fountains, sculptures of ice or maybe crystal.
Oh, how beautiful. But how am I to get through?
You think.
I could get my head through, but it would be of very little use without my shoulders. Oh, how I wish I could shut up like a telescope.
You return to the table, hoping to find a rule book for shutting up like a telescope. What you find, however, is a ruby-red bottle with a paper label tied round its neck, and printed on it, in beautiful large letters, the words...
Drink me.
As the bottle is not marked poison, you decide to taste it, finding it very nice.
Cherry tart, custard, pineapple, roast turkey, toffee, and... hot buttered toast. Oh, what a curious feeling. I must be shutting up like a telescope.
And so it is indeed. You are only 10 inches high now and still shrinking.
Oh my, what if I go out altogether like a candle? What should I be like? What is the flame of a candle like after the candle is blown out?
You wonder. However, you stop shrinking and decide on going into the garden at once. Oh, but you have forgotten the gold skull key. You can see it quite plainly through the table glass, and you try your best to climb up one of the legs of the table, but they're too slippery. You exhaust yourself with trying, and you are about to cry from your clear blue eyes when you see a small glass box lying under the table. You open it and find a teensy cake on which the words...
Eat me.
Appear in molding miniature strawberries.
Well, I'll eat it. And if it makes me grow larger, I can reach the key. And if it makes me smaller, I can creep under the door. Curiouser and curiouser. Now I'm opening up like the largest telescope that ever was. Oh!
Your head strikes the ceiling. You are 9 feet high. And at once, you take up the skull key and hurry off to the garden door. Oh, but getting through is hopeless. All you can do is lie on your side and look through into the garden with one eye. And so you weep on that pretty white dress.
Ugh! You ought to be ashamed of yourself. A great girl like you to cry like this. Stop this moment, I tell you. Stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
Oh, but you go on, shedding gallons of tears, until there's a large pool around you 4 inches deep and reaching half down the hall.
Blast it! Where is that door? Which one is the Duchess's? Oh, she'll be savage if I've kept her waiting, that fat head!
Oh, the White Rabbit! If you please, sir!
He scurries away, dropping a pair of black kid gloves and a Chinese fan.
Please, sir, come back! Oh, dear, dear. How queer everything is today.
You take up the fan and gloves, fidgeting with them as you go on talking.
Let me think. Was I the same when I got up? I almost think I can remember feeling different. But if I'm not the same, who am I? I'm sure I'm not Ada. Her ears are full of wax, and mine aren't waxy at all. I wonder if I know my times tables. Let me see. 4 times 5 is 12, and 4 times 6 is 13. Oh, dear. I shall never get to 20 at that rate. I must have been changed.
As you say this, you see that you've put on one of the rabbit's little black gloves.
Now, how can I have done that? I must be growing small again. Thank goodness. Now for the garden. Oh!
You slip. You find yourself up to your chin in freezing salt water.
Oh, I wish I hadn't cried so much. I shall be punished for it now, I suppose, by drowning in my own tears.
You hear something splashing about in the pool. A walrus or a hippopotamus, you think. But then you remember how small you are and soon make out that it's a mangy mouse that has slipped in like yourself. As it paddles closer to you, you observe that it is missing one of its eyes.
Oh, Mouse! Do you know the way out of this pool? I am very tired of swimming about here. Oh, Mouse!
It does not respond.
Perhaps it doesn't understand English. I dare say it's a French mouse.
So you say...
Où est ma chatte?
Ah!
Oh, I beg your pardon. I quite forgot you wouldn't like cats, even in French.
Not like cats? Would you be fond of cats if you were me?
Says the mouse, shoving its empty eye socket toward you. A number of fleas fly out of it.
I do apologize. I forgot. Don't be angry about it.
Our family always hated cats, even before the incident. Nasty, low, vulgar creatures. Don't let me hear the name again.
Very well, I won't.
You say, and in a great hurry to change the subject, you add...
Are you fond of dogs?
The mouse does not respond, but begins swimming away from you as hard as it can go, a cloud of fleas following.
Wait, mouse dear. We won't talk about cats or dogs if you don't like.
You swim after it, and it's high time, too, for the pool is getting quite crowded with the birds and animals that have fallen into it. There's a duck and a dodo, a lory and an eaglet, and several other curious, rotting creatures. You see in the distance a stretch of beach beneath a high, curving sky of rock. You paddle toward it with all of your might, and the animals follow. On the beach, you look at the company of birds. They all have the look of moldering, and the mouse you notice now is missing half of its fur.
I look a nightmare.
Downright bedraggled.
Ahem,
says the mouse with an important air.
Every feather's pointing the wrong way.
I feel like a sponge with legs.
Listen to me, all of you. We must get dry again.
Yes, we are liable to catch a bad cold if we don't get dry.
I disagree. I think we're truthable to lose a good heat,
says the dodo.
Yes, what he said.
Says the eaglet.
Whack.
Says the duck, the bottom of its bill nearly detached from decay.
Listen to me. Now, this is the driest thing I know. Silence all around, if you please. William the Conqueror, whose cause was favored by the Pope, was soon submitted to by the English.
You think?
I beg your pardon? Did you think an toward me?
This ain't drying me at all.
But I was going to say...
Edwin and Morka, the earls of Mercia and Northumbria...
Are you getting dry?
I'm as wet as ever.
What I was going to say was the best thing to get us dry would be a caucus waste.
What is a caucus waste?
Edwin and Morka, the earls, declared for him and even Steigen...
Leave off, Whiskers! We got a better idea. Now... What's a caucus waste?
Well, the best way to explain it is to do it.
The dodo marks out a race course in the sand, a sort of a circle. He says...
So, the exact shape does not matter. An elliptical trajectory is acceptable.
The dodo invites you to take your place along the course.
And... Bang!
Everyone begins running. You run. The duck bumps you with its broad rear. The eaglet shoves past you. The mouse sprays sand behind it as it scampers. The dodo stubs a talon and then flaps its wings to compensate. A half an hour passes in a whirlwind of feathers and fur.
The race is over!
That was wonderful. I only wish... Dinah could have been here for it.
Dinah? Who's that?
Dinah? She's my cat.
Cat?
Quack.
Yes, and such a capital one for catching mice.
Excuse me?
And birds. You should see her after birds. She'll eat one as soon as look at it.
Quack.
I really must be getting home. The night air doesn't suit my throat.
Funny you mention it. I think I'm coming down with a grip myself.
Lovely really to have met you.
You insult me, young lady.
On various pretexts, they all move off, and you are left alone.
Well, I wish I hadn't mentioned Dinah. Nobody seems to like her here.
Where in the fur are they? She'll have me executed, the Duchess, as sure as ferrets are ferrets. Where can I have dropped them?
The white rabbit.
A rabbit!
You guess quite quickly that the rabbit is looking for the fan and the pair of black gloves that he dropped before. You hunt about for them, but everything seems to have changed since your swim in the River of Tears. And as you stand amazed, the white rabbit notices you and draws out its whip.
Marianne, you stupid wench, what are you doing? Run home this moment and fetch me a pair of gloves and a fan, quick! Now, move!
You are so frightened that you move off at once.
He took me for his housemaid.
You think, as you run along a path leading to a cottage, on the door of which is a dull bronze plate with the name W. Rabbit engraved upon it.
How surprised he'll be when he finds out who I am. But I'd better take him his fan and gloves. That is, if I can find them.
The door is open. You pass within and find your way into a dingy little room with a table in the window. On it, a Chinese fan and a pair of tiny black gloves. You take them up, and you are about to leave when your eye falls on a little green bottle standing by the looking glass. There's no label this time with the words "drink me," but nevertheless, you uncork it and put it to your lips.
I know something interesting is sure to happen whenever I eat or drink anything, so I'll just see what this does.
And so you do. And before you drink half the bottle, you find your head pressing hard against the ceiling. You have to stoop to save your neck from snapping.
That's quite enough now.
You think, but you go on growing and growing, and very soon you have to kneel on the rug. An elbow is jammed against the door. One arm is sticking out of the window, and one foot up the chimney. Claustrophobia sets in.
Marianne! Fetch me my gloves this moment, you little twit! I punish sloth most severely! Oh-ho! Locked me out, have you? Very well, I'll go around and get in at the window.
That you won't.
You think, afraid of the anger in the creature's voice, and waiting till you fancy you hear him just under the window.
Locker-headed little hag.
You spread out your giant hand and make a snatch in the air.
Witchcraft and sorcery. Pat, where are you?
Sure then, I'm here, digging for apples, Your Honor.
Digging for apples, indeed. Here, come help me out of this. I'm bleeding all over. Now, tell me, Pat, what's that in the window?
Sure, it's an arum, Your Honor.
An arm, you cretin. Whoever saw one that size?
Oh, sure, it is big, Your Honor, but it's an arm for all that.
Well, it's got no business there. Go, take it away.
There is a long silence after this. You hear only whispers.
Sure, and I don't like it, Your Honor, at all, at all.
Do as I tell you, you feckless coward.
You decide to snatch at them again with your gigantic fingers.
Where's the other ladder?
Bill, lad, fetch the other ladder.
Bill? How many of them are there?
Here, put them up in this corner. No, don't tie them together first. Like this, you disfigured idiot. Now, go on.
You hear a small animal scratching and a scrambling on the roof.
Bill's got to go down. Tell him.
Bill, the master says you've got to go down.
You hear it coming from the chimney now. The thing is clamoring toward your foot in the fireplace. You decide to kick.
There goes Bill. Well, what are you standing there for, cat, you moron?
How was it, Bill? What happened to you?
Speak!
Don't choke the old fellow. What was it like, Bill?
I hardly know. Something comes at me like a jack in the box, and up I goes. The horror, the horror.
We must burn the house down.
If you do, I'll set Dinah at you.
You say, producing a dead silence.
If they had any sense, they'd take the roof off.
A barrelful will do to begin with.
A barrelful of what?
You wonder, but you have not long to doubt, for straight away, a shower of pebbles come rattling in at the window, dozens of them, hundreds, sharp, hitting you in the face.
Ow! Oh! Ow! Ouch!
You're listening to Radio Hour Alice, presented by the Plan B Theater Company. We're broadcasting live from the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in Salt Lake City. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with Radio Hour Alice, presented by the Plan B Theater Company.
A shower of pebbles come rattling in at the window. Dozens of them, hundreds, sharp, hitting you in the face.
Ow! Oh! Ouch! You'd better stop that.
You scream. And then, with some surprise, you notice that the pebbles on the floor are turning into little crescent cakes. A bright idea comes to you.
The cakes can't possibly make me larger.
So you swallow one of the cakes and are delighted to find that you begin shrinking directly. As soon as you're small enough to fit through the door, you run out of the house, finding a crowd of little animals and birds waiting outside.
Sip on this, Bill.
A dazed, deformed-looking lizard, Bill, is in the middle, held up by two guinea pigs, ladling a green liquor into his slack lips. One of them sees you.
Hey, that her?
That's the one!
Grab her! I'll take the left flank.
Charge!
The crowd charges you.
We're not much of a giant.
You run off as hard as you can into a thick stand of trees.
The first thing I've got to do is to grow my right size. The second is to find my way into that lovely garden. Oh!
In your haste, you run almost into a giant hound dog. It snarls at you, dull yellow eyes narrowing, spit dripping from its loose brown teeth.
My... I hope it isn't hungry.
Hardly knowing what to do, you pick up a little bit of a stick and hold it out to the dog. With a snort, it rushes at you. You dodge, hiding behind a great thistle. The dog is as large as a cart horse. It sees you and it rushes again, panting, barking hoarsely, its spotted tongue lolling out of its mouth, a trail of acid drool in the grass. You run around the thistle again. You dodge.
I've got to grow large again, but what do I eat or drink?
All around you are flowers and blades of grass, nothing to eat. But then... you spot a large mushroom growing nearby, about the same height as yourself. You throw the stick, the hound chases after it, and you bolt for the mushroom in the tall, wet grass. You peep over the edge of the mushroom, and immediately your eyes meet those of a large blue caterpillar, which is sitting, arms folded, quietly smoking a long hookah. It wears a yellow silk cravat. Its blue, fat body is molting, and its bulbous, tar-black eyes reflect everything around it. Dark, impassive mirrors. A stale skunk scent soils your sinuses, and suddenly you feel like light. You stare at each other for some time in silence when, at last, the caterpillar takes the hookah out of its tube-like indigo mouth. The thing addresses you in a languid, sleepy voice.
Who are you down there in the dew?
Not an encouraging opening for a conversation.
I hardly know, sir, just at present. At least, I know who I was when I got up this morning, but I think I must have been changed several times since then.
What do you mean by that? Explain yourself, stat. As in the Latin, statim.
I can't explain myself, I'm afraid, sir, because I'm not myself, you see.
I don't see, nor do I agree.
Well, I'm afraid I can't put it more clearly, for I can't understand it myself to begin with, and changing into so many different sizes in a day is very confusing.
I think not. You're overwrought.
Well, perhaps you haven't found changing confusing yet, but when you have to change into a chrysalis, you will someday, you know. And then after that into a butterfly, I should think you'll feel it a little queer, won't you?
Not a bit! I long to flit, I must admit.
Well, perhaps your feelings may be different. All I know is that it feels very queer to me.
You! Who are you? Down there in the dew.
I think you ought to tell me who you are first.
I think you oughtn't take a tone. This is a hookah zone.
Well, I never. See here, Mr. Caterpillar.
So, you think you're changed? Quite estranged.
Yes, I do, sir. I can't remember things as I used to, and I don't keep the same size for 10 minutes together.
What size do you want to be? What height would grant you glee?
Could you change me? I'm not particular, only one doesn't like changing so often, you know. Could you?
I don't know, I avow. Are you not content now?
Well, I should like to be a little larger, sir, if you wouldn't mind. 3 inches is such a wretched height to be.
It is a very good height indeed. 3 inches is all you need.
The caterpillar rears up angrily. It is exactly 3 inches high.
But I'm not used to it.
You'll get used to it in time. Soon, perhaps, it will feel sublime.
The worm peers at you with slitted deep space eyes, pulls the hookah from its sticky blueberry mouth, and with a yawn, rolls off of the mushroom. It crawls into the grass, flattening a path with its blubberous mass.
One side will make you grow taller. The other side will make you grow shorter. Expect from me no more quarter.
One side of what? The other side of what?
You think to yourself?
Of the mushroom, buffoon.
The caterpillar disappears from sight. The smoke clears. You look thoughtfully at the mushroom, breaking off a piece from the left and right side.
Now, which is which?
You nibble a morsel of the left-hand side. You wander farther into the dense forest, watching for the dog as you hurry on, and looking upward, you realize you cannot see the sun. You cannot tell if it is midday or evening or dawn. As a matter of fact, you cannot see the sky. Above you is a long stretch of ghostly gray rock. On closer inspection, you notice that the rock appears to be breathing. But then, a great commotion distracts you. You see a squat, 4-foot-tall Tudor house in the trees ahead, no taller than the lowest branches. You eat a little more mushroom from the right side.
It will never do to come upon them in this size. Why, I should frighten them out of their wits. And I need them to tell me how to get to the garden, or how to get home. Why, I believe that's a baby. There must be grown-ups about then.
Now, 9 inches high, you let yourself into the little house. You find yourself in a large kitchen full of smoke. A royal-looking lady sits on a 3-legged stool nursing a baby. A cook leans over a fire, stirring a large cauldron with what seems to be full of soup.
There's certainly too much pepper in that soup.
You think? There is certainly too much of it in the air. Clouds of pepper swirl in the low kitchen like demonic dervishes. The only two creatures in the kitchen not sneezing are the cook and a disgustingly obese cat lying on the hearth, grinning from ear to ear.
Please, madame, tell me, why does your cat grin like that?
It's a Cheshire cat, that's why! Pig!
I didn't know that Cheshire cats always grinned. In fact, I didn't know that cats could grin.
They all can, and most of them do.
I don't know any that do, madame.
I am a duchess, and you don't know much. That's a fact.
You do not like the tone of this remark, but you cannot think of a rebuttal. You try to take your eyes off of the smiling, fur, feline lips, but you cannot. You try to recall why you came into this house in the first place, but you cannot.
When will that soup be ready?
Oh, it's ready. It's ready, all right.
The cook begins throwing everything in reach at the Duchess and the baby. Fire irons, a shower of saucepans, plates, and dishes. The Duchess takes no notice of them, even as they hit her. And the baby, well, it's already howling so much that it's quite impossible to say whether the blows hurt it or not.
Please mind what you're doing!
You shout at the cook.
Yes, if everybody minded their own business, the world would go round a deal faster than it does.
Which would not be an advantage. Just think what work it would make with the day and night. You see, the Earth takes 24 hours
to... Don't bother me! I never could abide figures. Speak roughly to your little boy and beat him when he sneezes. He only does it to annoy because he knows it teases. Wow, wow, wow! Here, you may nurse it a bit if you like.
The Duchess flings the baby at you. You catch it with some difficulty.
I must go and get ready to play croquet with the Queen.
The Duchess hurries out of the room. The cook throws a frying pan after her as she goes, but it just misses.
Oh, the poor little thing. Look at its arms and legs sticking out in all directions, just like a starfish.
You think as you try to hold on to the baby. It snorts like a steam engine, doubling itself and then straightening itself out again. You run out of the house.
If I don't take this child away with me, they're sure to kill it in a day or two. Wouldn't it be murder to leave it behind? Don't grunt. That's not a proper way of expressing yourself.
Worried for it, you anxiously peer into its face to see what's the matter. Examining it, you notice a very upturned nose. Also, its eyes are getting smaller, rounder, blacker, too small, round, and black for a baby.
If you're going to turn into a pig, my dear, I'll have nothing more to do with you. Mind now! Oh!
The creature tries to chomp at your neck. You drop it. It trots off quietly into the woods.
Oh, well. If it had grown up, it would have made a dreadfully ugly child.
You sigh. You turn toward the woods again, and there, sitting on the bough of a tree, is the bloated Cheshire Cat. It grins. Very long claws and a great many teeth. A fat tick burrowing into its neck. Crusted blood in its ash-colored fur. But it doesn't seem to be concerned with that. Nothing seems to unsettle it. The sliver eyes and the wide, toothy smile do not move. You feel that it should be treated with respect.
You're listening to Radio Hour Alice, live from the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in Salt Lake City, presented by the Plan B Theater Company. We'll take another break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. And now the conclusion of Plan B Theater Company's Radio Hour Alice.
The sliver eyes and wide, toothy smile do not move. You feel it should be treated with respect as you ask it.
Cheshire Puss, would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?
That depends a good deal on where you want to get to.
I don't much care where.
Then it doesn't matter which way you go.
I mean, so long as I get somewhere.
Oh, you're sure to do that, if only you walk long enough.
The cat swats at the tick on its neck, pins it with a plump paw against the branch. It eats it.
What sort of people live about here?
In that direction lives a hatter. And in that direction lives a March hare. Visit either you like. They're both mad.
But I don't want to go among mad people.
Oh, you can't help that. We're all mad here. I'm mad. You're mad.
How do you know that I'm mad?
You must be, or you wouldn't have come here.
How do you know that you're mad?
Well, to begin with, a dog's not mad. You grant that?
I suppose so.
Well then, you see, a dog growls when it's angry and wags its tail when it's pleased. Now I growl when I'm pleased and wag my tail when I'm angry. Therefore, I'm mad.
I call it purring, not growling.
Call it what you like. Do you play croquet with the queen today?
I should like to very much, but I haven't been invited yet.
You'll see me there.
The cat vanishes. It appears again.
By the by, what became of the baby? I'd nearly forgotten to ask.
It turned into a pig.
I thought it would.
The cat vanishes. It appears again.
Did you say pig or fig?
I said pig.
All right.
The cat vanishes slowly, beginning with the end of its tail and ending with a skeletal grin, which hangs midair for some time.
Well, I've often seen a cat without a grin, but grin without a cat? That's the most curious thing I ever saw in all my life.
You hustle to the March Hare's house, happy to have a direction. The Cheshire grin floats through your thoughts as you plod down the dirt path. You fleetingly see a monstrous version of it in the stone sky. At least, you think you do.
Ahead, you see the March Hare's house. You know that it's the right house because the chimneys are shaped like ears and the roof is thatched with fur. You eat a little left-hand mushroom and shrink yourself to an appropriate 2 feet high. There is a table set out under a tree in front of the house, and the March Hare and Hatter are having tea at it. The March Hare wears a black and red striped suit, its ginger fur tousled and untamed. The Hatter wears an olive-colored suit coat with tails. His jolly face is deeply pockmarked. His teeth are crooked, his eyes bulging and unblinking beneath a leathery lime stovepipe hat. You edge into the yard.
No room!
No room!
No room! No room!
They cry, seeing you approach.
But there's plenty of room at the table.
You say indignantly, sitting in a large purple armchair at one end.
Have some wine,
says the March Hare.
I don't see any wine.
There isn't any.
Then it wasn't very civil of you to offer it.
It wasn't very civil of you to sit down without being invited.
I didn't know it was your table. It's laid for a great many more than three.
Your hair wants cutting,
the Hatter says to you.
That's very rude.
Why is a raven like a writing desk?
Oh, a riddle. I believe I can guess that.
Do you mean you think you can find out the answer to it?
Exactly so.
Then you should say what you mean!
I do. At least, I mean what I say. That's the same thing, you know.
Not the same thing a bit! Why, you might just as well say, I see what I eat is the same thing as I eat what I see!
You might just as well say, I like what I get is the same as I get what I like!
You might just as well say, I love what I kill is the same thing as I kill what I love.
Well, that is the same thing with you.
Yes! By the by, I just love your hair, little girl. I would love to cut it and fit you for a hat. What day of the month is it?
I believe the 4th.
Ah, 2 days wrong! I told you butter wouldn't suit the works, you daffy hop-along! My watch is ruined!
It was the best butter!
Yes, but some crumbs must have got in as well. You shouldn't have put it in with the straight razor.
It was the best butter!
Have you guessed the riddle yet?
No. I give it up. What's the answer?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Nor I.
I think you might do something better with the time than wasting it in asking riddles that have no answers.
You knew time as well as I. You wouldn't talk about wasting it. It's him.
I don't know what you mean.
Of course you don't. I dare say you never even spoke to time.
Perhaps not, but I know I have to beat time when I learn music.
Ah, that accounts for it. He won't stand beating. That is, unless you're very familiar.
Is that how you manage?
Not I, no. We quarreled last March, just before Big Ears went mad.
I'm not mad!
You thatch your roof using your own fur, sir.
True, but I don't have a hat made out of my own baby sister!
Anyhow, it was before he went mad at the great concert given by the Queen of Cups, and I had to sing, twinkle, twinkle, little bat, how I wonder what you're at. You know the song, perhaps?
I've heard something like it.
Up above the world you fly, like a tea tray in the sky. Twinkle, twinkle. Well, I'd hardly finished the first verse when the Queen bawled out,
he's murdering time! Off with his head!
How dreadfully savage!
And ever since that, time won't do a thing I ask. It's always 6 o'clock now.
Is that the reason so many tea things are put out here?
I suppose we change the subject. I vote the young lady tell us a story.
Oh, I don't think
then you shouldn't talk!
I beg your pardon?
I beg all you like, but I will not excuse vapidness.
Well,
this piece of rudeness is more than you can bear. You get up in great disgust and walk off. Neither of the mad duo protests, although looking back at the end of the yard, you see the Hatter staring right into you, licking the butter off a scone.
I'll never go there again,
you think, noticing a nearby oak tree with a door in it.
That's very curious.
The tree is dry, gray, and scowling. Maybe you're imagining it, but it sounds like a rushed confusion of grunts and doleful whispers are coming out of the branches. You feel pulled to the tree. You decide to enter it. You find yourself back in the long hall next to the little glass table. You take the little golden key, unlock the door that leads to the garden, nibble on some mushroom, until you're about a foot high, and then you walk down the tiny passage.
At last!
You are in the beautiful garden, among the bright orange flowers, cool fountains, and statues of ice. Above, you see the sun and moon and stars all in the same sky. A large rose tree stands near the door. The roses growing on it are white, but there are two gardeners before them, busily painting them red. Even stranger, the gardeners are shaped exactly like tarot cards, with arms, legs, and heads. They are the 5 and 7 of coins.
Excuse me, would you tell me, please, why you are painting those roses?
The 5 of coins flinches, eyeballs you suspiciously, but says nothing. 7, however, is friendlier.
Why, the fact is, you see, miss, this here ought to have been a red rose tree, and we put a white one in by mistake. And if the queen was to find out, we should all have our heads cut off, you know? So you see, miss, we're doing our best before she comes in to try
to...
The cards throw themselves flat on their faces. You look around, eager to see the queen. But it's 10 oblong soldiers that march into view, the ace through the 10 of scepters. You see the white rabbit hopping nervously alongside them, carrying a silver trumpet. Finally, you see the king and queen of cups. And to your great amazement, the queen is upside down, walking on her hands with a dozen two-dimensional royal red petticoats and purple gown in the air. She is surprisingly nimble for a hand walker who is only a quarter of an inch thick. She stops. She sees you in the prostrate coin cards. She lopes across the garden to you.
Who is this?
The queen demands, boring into you with upside-down eyes. No one in the procession answers.
Idiots! What is your name, child?
My name? I believe it's Alice, so please, your majesty.
And who are these?
The queen asks of 5 and 7.
How should I know? It's no business of mine.
Off with her head! Off with her head!
Nonsense!
My darling,
interjects the king, bending down to talk to his topsy-turvy wife, eye to eye.
Darling, she is only a child. Decapitation is so severe. I suggest we draw and quarter her instead, or... perhaps have a trial?
What have you been doing here?
The queen shrieks, spying the cans of paint. The 7 of coins lifts his head.
May it please your majesty, we were trying to, the roses. They needed a bit of touching
you
up.
You meant to trick me!
No.
This is not a red rose tree! I specifically commanded that they all be red!
We can paint it completely red, your worship, roots to shoots. If you grant us
naturally
but a moment...
Naturally red, not seemingly red! Red! Off with his head! And his!
No, please, your highness!
The scepter cards shuffle forward, wrestle the 5 and 7 of coins, and tear at their necks!
Our only thought was to appease you!
Your stomach lurches as red ink spurts from 5 and 7 into the grass, leaving a Rorschach of gore. The queen pivots on her hands, faces you. Her cardboard lips crinkle into a broad, satisfied smile.
Now, as for you, you impertinent snit, you will be tried. Arrest her!
Take her hands!
No!
Arrest. Be careful!
Ouch. Arrest her!
You are seized by the scepter cards and dragged, flailing, into the castle's dungeon court. They tie your wrists with ropes of red, black, and white strands to the defendant box. Black candles are lit. The jury box is soon filled with beasts and birds. Bill, the misshapen lizard, is among them. His bright blue tongue flickers as he risks a skittish glance at you. The dodo and the eaglet are jurymen, too, and the 2 guinea pigs outside the white rabbit's house, who seem unsteady with liquor. The king of cups assumes the judge's seat. The queen hand stands beside him, only her huge cream-stockinged thighs visible behind the bench. The king speaks.
Call the first witness, please.
The white rabbit blows on his silver horn 3 times. The pink eyes ooze as he blows. The candles around you go to guttering. Yellow light flashes on and off in your eyes. The room is black, yellow, black, yellow. The Mad Hatter comes into the court.
I beg your pardon, your majesty, for bringing these tea things in, but I hadn't quite finished my tea when I was sent for.
Oh, you ought to have finished. When did you start?
14th of March, I believe. Why, hello again, Alice. Your hair has become unruly. I see split ends. You must let me take scissors to you.
Sir, do not address the defendant and kindly remove your hat.
It isn't mine.
Shh.
stolen?
No, I keep them to sell. I've none of my own. I'm a hatter.
Ah, very good then. Now give your evidence, please.
I have none.
Oh, nonsense. Of course you have. We know that you spoke with the accused earlier today. Proceed.
Give your evidence or be executed on the spot,
says the queen under the judge's bench, to which the hatter lolls his head to one side, his lime stovepipe hat almost sliding off. He smirks.
I believe this is badgering the witness.
I believe this is a hostile witness.
Hostile? Oh, no. I'm nervous, maybe. You are making me nervous, your majesties. No telling what I might do.
The hatter bites a large piece out of his teacup instead of the bread and butter. Ceramic shards slice through lip and tongue as the hatter gnashes. Blood dribbles down his dress shirt. He winks at you and clutches at his crotch.
Now see here. The chewing of fine china is strictly forbidden in this court. Rule 16.
Off with his head!
The hatter lurches at you.
Guards!
He hurtles the wooden railing surrounding you, dodging the swipe of a soldier's glaive. You try to flee, but you're tied to the spot. The candles are flashing. The hatter thrusts his craterous face through your blonde hair and breathes out on your neck. A drop of hot, bloody spittle drips into the groove above your collarbone.
Come with me, Alice. I can save you from this. Say you want it.
A soldier's spear glints behind the hatter's head. A broad, flat blade at the end of it whistles toward you both. The hatter is beheaded. The body slumps against you. A crimson geyser between the shoulders. A red, tepid pint sprays you in the face. Red runs down your neck, down your white dress.
Oh dear.
Remove the witness from the defendant, please.
Terror courses through you. Your fingers tense. Your heart thrums. Your skin stretches. Your innards multiply. You begin to grow bigger and bigger.
What is happening now?
The girl is growing.
All girls grow, so what?
Little miss, stop that this instant. Rule 42, all persons more than a mile high must leave the court.
I'm not a mile high, and I will leave gladly. Besides, that's not a regular rule. You invented it just now.
It's the oldest rule in the book!
Screams the queen, climbing the judge's bench, shaking a booted foot at you.
If it's the oldest rule, it ought to be number one.
Consider your verdict, jury.
No! Sentence first, verdict afterwards.
Nonsense! If Dinah were here, I would sick her on you all. Stuff and nonsense!
You shout, growing even larger.
The idea of having the sentence first.
Hold your tongue!
The queen turns purple.
I won't! I'm not listening to any of you!
No! Then off with her head!
The ace through the ten of scepters rush at you, stabbing their spears into your ankles and chins.
Off with her head!
The white rabbit runs at you too, the pink eyes swelling, his whip cracking. The jury rises up. The mouse, the dodo, Bill the lizard, the caterpillar, all of them come at you. The March Hare somersaults and boxes at your baby toe. Bill scrambles up your calf. You kick and kick and kick!
Off with her head!
The fanged grin of the Cheshire Cat appears between your giant eyes.
How do you like the queen?
Bill the lizard skitters up your inner thigh.
Get off me! Get off me! Get off me!
With her head!
No! You're nothing but a pack of cards!
Wake up, Alice, dear, wake up. The sun is almost down.
You open your eyes. Your sister's sweet oval face hovers above you, her platinum hair haloed in the last sunlight, her brows bunched together in concern.
You're just dreaming, darling.
Dreaming? Was I?
You ask yourself. You cannot tell. You see the sunset, the tan grass of the park, the lazy river, but none of it feels real.
You dozed off, silly. Now come on. We should be getting back.
Now breathe. Stretch. Come back. Gently blink your eyes and gaze around the room. Return fully to the outer world. Remembering this, at any time, you can come again to Wonderland. As you reorient yourself, Remember the pathways of this journey that you've just taken. The rabbit hole, the pool of tears, the woods, the door in the tree. Know that the creatures you saw today are waiting for you, always. In the cobwebs of your child's mind, always.
In a wonderland they lie, dreaming as the days go by, dreaming as the summers die. Ever drifting down the stream,
Plan B's Radio Hour Alice was written by Matthew Ivan Bennett, directed by Cheryl Ann Clough. The actors are Bill Allred as the narrator, Tobin Atkinson played the White Rabbit in The March Hare, Jay Perry was the Cheshire Cat in The Mad Hatter, Teresa Sanderson played the Caterpillar and the Queen, and Emma Munson was Alice. Music for the production was created and performed by David Evanoff. The sound effects were designed by Corey Thorell, performed by Daisy Blake. Jennifer Freed is the stage manager. The sound engineer is Mark Robinette. The show was directed for radio by Eric Robinette. Randy Rasmussen designed the set, and Jesse Portillo created the lighting. Plan B's producing director is Jerry Rapier. Our thanks to the Salt Lake County Center for the Arts, Jeff William and Stephanie Slade. Thanks also to Mike Anderson. Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our engineer is Lewis Downey. The program produced by Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.